For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Everyone, during this time of physical distancing and new way of us sharing the Dharma together, many things have surprised me during this time of learning to live with a new microbe in our midst. But one of the things that have surprised me the most was discovering this text, which I am putting up to the window. And it is entitled The First Free Women, Poems of the Early Buddhist Nuns. And it is a translation, a rather free-form translation of the first female poems of the first female disciples of Buddha. And what surprised me was how open I felt to these poems and how close I'm beginning to feel to these women who lived 2,500 years ago in a land far away. So I think I'll share a little bit of background about the poem and the poems and the Theragata, in case some people are not familiar with this work. And then maybe we'll just look at a couple little poems and the stories of these sister ancestors, who practiced with the Buddha. So this work, again, the Theragata, is very old. And this was a time these women spoke these words, these verses, at a time when their words were not written down. The words of Buddha weren't written down. This was a time of storytelling and of transmission by speaking face to face, kind of like what we're doing now. And they were in a verse form. Gatha, that word gatha, is verse, which made it easier to memorize. You know, like Homeric works like the Odyssey and the Iliad, those were also tales that were told long before they were written down, hundreds of years before they were written down. So these are the stories of the first Buddhist women. And these poems are pretty brief, but they contain a huge amount of Dharma, directly transmitted Dharma from these women. And I think it can be helpful when you read these to think that they contain way-seeking mind stories, that is, sketching the life circumstances that led these women to seek ordination in Buddha's community. These women had been wives, mothers, grandmothers, great beauties, sex workers, queens. They had children. Some had been abused. Some had been marginalized. Some had a lot of privilege. Some had suffered with madness, what we might call depression. So they tell the stories of their lives that brought them to seek and embrace the way of Buddha, the way of honoring the preciousness of each moment and each being that we encounter. So you could say they entail little snippets of way-seeking mind stories. These poems also entail moments of awakening. Similar to some of the Zen teaching stories known as koans, or even in many other Buddhist scriptures or sutras, these contain stories of how the moment of entry into complete awakening. So that's one aspect. The other aspect, maybe one way we can think of this, is also they entail some practice instructions for us. We're in good company, maybe, to know that the things we struggled with, and that we struggle with in our zazen or in our daily life of actualizing the precepts and the paramitas in our everyday life, these women also struggled with them and have a little bit of advice or instructions about how to settle the mind and experience each moment fully without holding back. Another aspect of these poems that you can consider when you hear them or read them is they also contain little tidbits that give us some view of the intimate relationships between these female teachers and their students, who also became teachers often. There's a sense of the intimacy in those relationships. So these things of looking for the way-seeking mind stories, the moments of awakening, the practice instructions, and the kind of relational quality of this early community of women practitioners, these are all things that, you know, I found and still find very heartening to experience as I read through these. And maybe I'll spend a couple years studying these works. You could say this is another round of studying the Theragatha for me. Because actually at first I kind of resisted it. I was like, oh, this is some old ancient stuff and the language is clunky. But I want to thank the translator writer Maddie Weingast for infusing it with some kind of modern energy that's helped me enter more deeply into our sisters, ancestor sisters' world. So who were these women? They lived such a long time ago in a land far away. They were sort of the original gangsters of the women's liberation movement. They were, I think, courageous revolutionaries. They defied social norms and convention. They even defied Buddha's refusal to ordain them. I think there's a passage in Dogen's Ehe Kuroku that says something like this: if you want to find the true, if you want to enter the room of the true self, break down the door. So I feel these women opened a door, a Dharma gate, for all of us, no matter what one's gender identification was. They came from so many different backgrounds, like I said. But as it goes with storytelling, there are stories within stories. And while each particular poem has its unique story of this woman's experience, I'll start with the broader story of how women join Buddha's community. And this story might be familiar to some of you, so I apologize if you can stand, please bear with me if you can stand to hear it once again. But I think it's a moving story that bears repeating. So Buddha's mother Maya died 7 days after childbirth. So essentially his mother, his adoptive mother, but his mother who raised him and fed him her breast milk, was his mother's sister named Maha Pajapati. So his aunt was really his mother. And Maha Pajapati was married to Buddha's father. So, you know, in those days, polygamy was a common practice, as well as having a harem of female pleasure objects. So this was that context. At any rate, Maha Pajapati, after the death of her husband, long after Buddha had left home, you could say Buddha's prior to enlightenment was known as Siddhartha Gautama, his family name. So Buddha, actually, just to give a little more background, another story. So as you recall, Buddha, when he was Siddhartha Gautama, a prince somewhere in India, northern India, had a little freak out when he realized the reality of illness, disease, old age, and death, and abandoned his family to try to come to terms with this experience. So in some ways, you know, we're kind of in the midst of a similar situation ourselves right now. So I find these old stories of what do we do when we're face to face with difficulty such as death and disease. And we can't even leave our homes. So the Sangha of female monks, practitioners, the original Sangha, came about when Maha Pajapati, after her husband died, began left her home and looked for her son and found him and listened to the teachings of Buddha. And Buddha already had his own congregation of male followers. And upon listening to the teachings, Buddha's mother / aunt requested to become a member of his Sangha. And Buddha said to his own mother, "Enough. Don't set your heart on women being allowed to do this, being allowed to practice, being allowed to be part of my community of monks." And during this first request event, Maha Pajapati requested two more times, please consider, I would like to join your group as a full-on disciple. And again, Buddha was like, "Enough, don't set your heart on women being allowed to do this." So after three times, Buddha refused and Maha Pajapati went away. Not to be deterred, she decided to organize maybe the first women's freedom march. Women's March. She gathered a group of women who were also interested in ordination and they performed the radical act of shaving their heads and putting on the what we call the okhesa, the robes of a Buddhist disciple and monk, and returned to Buddha. And Mahaprajapati, representing her congregation of women, again went to Buddha and requested ordination. And again, three times, Buddha said, enough, don't set your heart on this, on women being allowed to practice as fully ordained, fully devoted practitioners. And this upset his mother, of course, and she was crying outside in the rain, as they say, with feet swollen from walking for miles to seek out her son. And Buddha's attendant, Ananda, a male monk, already fully ordained into the community of monks, saw her and was moved and saddened by her refusal, and became an ally for these women, and stood up and went to Buddha. And, you know, Ananda and Buddha were very close, and Buddha was, you know, listened to Ananda again, and twice again, Buddha refused Ananda's request for these women to join. So Ananda maybe pressed a little further. So instead of saying, oh, Buddha, could these women please be ordained? Could you ordain your mother and her friends? Ananda said, is it so, Buddha, that women are capable of realizing complete enlightenment, Buddhahood, complete awakening? And Buddha said, they are, Ananda. So Ananda said, if that's so, wouldn't it be good if women were allowed to be ordained? And Buddha thought for a minute, maybe more, maybe less, I wasn't there, and said, if, Ananda, Mahaprajapati will accept 8 special rules, 8 special conditions, it will be regarded that she has been ordained already as a nun or monk, let's say. And thus, Mahaprajapati agreed and became the first ordained disciple of Buddha, female disciple of Buddha. Now, these 8 conditions were basically that women were subordinate to men, to even the most junior monk. And there were a bunch of other rules they had to follow. So in some ways, Buddha only subordinated his own mother, just for the record. And Mahaprajapati agreed to this. And sometimes I felt kind of like, and she agreed to these conditions, you know, but I guess you have to start somewhere. But maybe we don't have to stop there. You know, remember that saying from Dogen, if you want to enter the room, break down the door. Well, these women maybe didn't have to break it down. They just knew it was unlocked and can open it. So that's the context of these poems, to the extent that I know it. All these things are nice stories. So what I'd like to do is just look at a couple of these poems together. And the first one that I'd like to offer, I think, is one relevant to our times and perhaps relevant to some of our experience And this is the poem of one of the first female monks. The OG named Chanda. And Chanda means the moon. Chanda, by the way, was the daughter of an impoverished elite. And her father was a Brahmin. But they were very poor. And eventually, out of this poverty and loss, she became a beggar, a depressed, mad beggar. So here's Chanda's little poem, Compliments of Maddie Weingast. Do you remember when disease came to your village? Of your family, you were the only one to survive. You were just a girl. For years, you begged for your food, and then you wept, and you wept with her. Her name was Patachara. So Patachara, Acharya Patachara, great teacher Patachara, was Chanda's teacher. You went everywhere, Patachara went, and soon left behind all that she left behind. When you were young, you learned what it was like to be truly alone. Now you know for yourself this freedom that is something altogether different from that loneliness. So I'll say a few things about this. You know, we're in a time when disease has come to our village. So maybe we can relate to that experience. And if we haven't already, maybe we can relate to the sense of loss of even being a survivor in our families. And she was just a girl. So Chanda, after her family all died, and there was no one to care for her as a young girl, she took a bowl and would beg for her food. But she was overcome and distraught and often would be, you know, chased away with sticks, you know, kind of like how we turn away from homeless people. But Patachara didn't turn away. The story says that when she actually approached Patachara, and Patachara was a female monk who Buddha accepted into the Sangha. But Patachara took in Chanda. Now, the other interesting thing, at least to me, is interesting about this story, is Patachara herself had been a mad wandering woman who had lost her children, her husband, her parents, and went insane, and also was an itinerant homeless person. She came to Buddha, and Buddha's followers were like, don't pay attention to that homeless, crazy woman. And Buddha said to her, sister, regain your presence of mind. Regain your presence of mind. And Patachara snapped out of it and became herself a fully ordained monk. Said to be a master of the precepts, but also kind, right? So there's a kindness here. Patachara didn't turn away from Chanda, but turned towards her in this desperate situation, gave her food, and listened to her story and her grief, and shared her own experience with her. This is this intimacy, you know, in teaching stories. And then Patachara accepted Chanda as a disciple, and she went everywhere with her. And together, they entered the room of their true self, of their true home, of this Buddha's awakening. Our time is moving along. So I'll just, if it's okay with everyone, just one more little story. If you're not okay, like send me a bunch of those thumbs down or whatever they are in your reactions. But Bodhisattva's, just one more story maybe. There's a quick little poem of Sumana, whose name is means flowering jasmine. And she was an old woman when she entered the group of female monks. But she'd been a sister of a king, and she heard Buddha speak and immediately knew this was the right thing for her, but she had other things to attend to. So in her home life, she cared for her family and her grandmother and practiced on her own the refuges and the precepts. And then upon her grandmother's death, she sought out Buddha, bearing gifts of, I think it was fine household furnishings, something like Persian rugs and nice ornaments, and presented these to Buddha. You know, this is like Samantabhadra's vows, offering gifts to Buddha. So she made offerings to Buddha and then sat down and listened to one of his talks and immediately requested ordination from Buddha. And Buddha, of course, saw her attainment. So this is not, it's not like she sat in a monastery for 100 years or something like that. Who knows if she even sat on her own? She was busy taking care of people. But Buddha immediately saw her awakening and said to her, "Rest you, Sumana, flowering jasmine, wrapped in a robe you yourself made. You have calmed your desires, your passions, that have raged within. Now you're calm and you know the peace of the Dharma." So this is actually someone who is, you know, basically ordained by Buddha. Remember, I think Chanda was really ordained by Patachara. So here's just this little snippet of, this is the poem from Sumana. "Walk through the mind all day and all night. When you find each thought ending right where it began, hear your circling ends. Walk through the mind all day and all night. When you find each thought right where it began, hear your circling around the drain of delusion ends." So this is a very nice practice instruction, and some of you might remember, you know, following the stream of thought to the source, resting in the place before thought arises. Those are common images in, you know, Song Dynasty Chinese writings. But long before that, it seems that our sister Sumana figured out that truth and practiced with it. So I think that's probably enough to share with you today. And again, thank you very much for being here. And I would, you know, be very happy to hear your responses or anything else you'd like to say, Bodhisattvas.
So as your host today, I want to first know that to ask, and you can do that by pressing the space bar or raising your hand.
Yeah, could you read another poem?
Sure, a different one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mute you.
Hi, Eve.
Hi.
This is for you. This is from Visakha, Many Branches. You say you're too busy, that there's never enough time. Take care of whatever you have to take care of. Then sit. Be honest. Do you really think you're going to live forever?
So, can you say a little bit about who wrote that one?
Visakha, yeah, let me think a little bit about her, what her story is. So, you know, actually, I don't have it at the top of my head what her story is. So I can't say a lot about her at this moment. But I will say, take care of whatever you have to take care of. Then sit. So there is this instruction of taking care of our lives, of whatever that is. You know, it right now. Maybe that's really all there is to practice, is just taking care of our lives and each other, which is our lives. And then sit, maybe sitting is just a little rest stop along the way. So thank you, Eve.
Yeah, thank you.
David, you can just unmute yourself. I think that's fine.
Thank you so much for that rich talk and introducing us to that material and the stories that I didn't know about. Many things really moved me in the stories as well as the poems. And I'm thinking about heteropatriarchy and what it is to live in that. And I'm moved by the thought of the humanness of the man Buddha, who even after enlightenment, it sounds like, you know, experienced the relation to his mother as a kind of, you know, humiliation of the male. Anyway, all of that, the way that a man in heteropatriarchy is taught to experience the mother. And I'm feeling moved by that, and very moved by the story of Ananda the monk stepping up as an ally and asking the question, which amounts to saying, you know, are women human beings? Does it work with women the way that it works with you know, just people, namely males? I'm just really moved by that, and today I feel even closer to this tradition that I am still working my way into. So I'm really grateful for that talk very much. Thank you.
David, you put that very nicely. You know, there's a tenderness to Buddha's maybe lack of courage that I certainly feel I've lacked courage in being an ally or in standing up for what I know is true or just backing away a little bit. And also the importance of standing up in that truth and finding supporting and going beyond Buddha, you know. So these women were like teaching Buddha. And so we can look at what's the limit of my flexibility. So yeah, you know, these issues are alive and well 2,500 years later. So may we go beyond them together. So thank you so much. Yeah.
Susan, I would like to suggest that some of the stories that have come down to us in our tradition have been also invented by men. So to make the teachings more palatable in a cultural context that was very discriminatory. So I wonder what Buddha's attitude toward his mother really was in telling this story. And I would suggest that maybe there were some fabrications involved in the transmission of these stories that we need to continue to inquire about, you know, whether that was the story really, or whether there might, I mean, I've heard other stories about, for example, when Buddha supposedly abandoned his family, that he actually talked it over with Yasodhara. And he said, you know, I have this vocation. And she agreed. So I don't know. I mean, I really do feel like we need to be, to hold these stories and not, you know, believe them straight out of hand. Thank you.
I think that we should believe nothing straight out of hand. And I do agree with you very much that part of my resistance to these stories and any of these stories is that they... are made up, and we can make whatever we want with them. And I've been, you know, part of my resistance to the Terigatha has been this resistance to subordination. And I don't want to carry that tradition forward. So Susan, I think this is right. How that ever gets untangled, you know, there's a lot of scholarship by men and women around these stories now. But nonetheless, nobody was there. Maybe Buddha had some other issues, you know. Maybe they all had great conversations of like, yeah, let's just talk about how this works for our family, for our son and father and whatever to leave. Maybe those things happened. I can only say that for me, the heart of practice is what is carried on, and that the cultural and patriarchal roots are something that we have, must come to terms with for this to go forward, for our practice to go forward. So I think that your warning is well said, and please keep encouraging us to look more critically. So thank you very much for that, Susan.
Gutsu, thank you for a really good talk. I was really struck by that first story also. And something that I took away from it was just recognizing that in all of our lives, there are times when others, for whatever reason, don't recognize our true value or what we have to offer, and that we don't need to let that determine who we are. It seems like, you know, Maha Prajapati, as the story was told, was able to find a skillful way to find, you know, gain admission to something. And, you know, maybe just was able to accept that the status was not going to be there or was going to come around in its own time. And so it kind of just reminded me of, you know, the importance of being patient. And it also reminded me of that line from the Song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi, which now I can't, with practice hidden, function secretly like a fool, like an idiot. There are times where we just have to hang in there. So that's sort of what I took from that story.
Yeah, I don't think Mahaprajapati had a choice. Sometimes you open the door, sometimes you break it down, sometimes you wait outside the door, sometimes there is no door. That's right. Patience and persistence. Thank you, Aishan. Yes?
Could you say more about how the monks and nuns lived in community?
Is there anything in particular you're interested in about that? Because, you know, this was a time of basically wandering and coming together at various times during the year, during the rainy season traditionally, which is what our practice periods or angos are based on. But my fantasy is that the women were segregated pretty much and lived in their own community. And then at different times, certainly for a joint recitation of the precepts and full moon ceremonies would come together. But, you know, the eight rules, part of it is that women, when they were performing certain rituals, had to have males present. And so they probably got together in various forest-like locations. But that's a pretty much the nutshell that I would want to say at this point. I wasn't there, as far as I can remember, yet. Thanks, Eve. Tigan, I just wanted to check. Did you want to say something?
No, just that I really appreciated your talk. I'm sorry I missed the very beginning due to technical difficulties, but yeah, there have been throughout Buddhist history, people, men and women, who had to overcome obstacles to be able to practice. And the Theravada is certainly a good example and relevant for us today. So thank you very much.
So,
okay, so if I may, I just wanted to join David Ray in saying thank you very much for a wonderful talk. You sparked a lot of interest in my own mind and a need to try to look at this and understand this more. So thank you very, very much. It's much appreciated. Thank you.
You're very welcome.